On the show today, a second convoy of 14 aid trucks entered the Rafah crossing to Gaza Sunday. But some are complaining the aid is like a drop of water in the ocean.
If this situation continues, the entire population won't find food or drink. We won't find bread or flour, anything at all.
Two top U.S. officials warned Iran and its allies against any escalation in the wake of Israel's war with Hamas.
If Iran enters, you have to predict that the United States is going to enter that war.
Plus, elections in Argentina and Venezuela, and shoes for children in sub-Saharan Africa.
Most families, shoes is the last thing they think about.
Today is Monday, October 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. Israel bombarded Gaza with airstrikes early Monday, and its aircraft struck southern Lebanon overnight, as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu convened a meeting of his top generals and his war cabinet to assess the escalating conflict. With the violence between Israel and Hamas raging unchecked, Iran said the region could spiral out of control, and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu issued a stark warning to Lebanon's Hezbollah, saying getting involved would be the mistake of its life. VOA's Linda Gradstein is in Jerusalem and spoke with Steve Miller about the current situation.
Well, Israel is continuing to bombard Gaza, certain North Gaza. It's told civilians to leave, and more than half a million, or about 600,000, have left and moved to South Gaza. However, there are still about 350,000 Palestinian civilians in Gaza. The Hamas leaders are actually believed to be in tunnels and in bunkers underneath the streets. Whole areas of Gaza have been leveled. The first 20 trucks of humanitarian aid did get in on Saturday, and there's another convoy of trucks that's at the Egyptian side of the Gaza border and is expected to come in the next day or so. And then, the United States says that Israel has agreed to let humanitarian aid into Gaza. Now, for Israel, the biggest issue right now is the hostages. There are 212 hostages believed being held by Hamas, and believed to still be alive. And that for Israelis, it includes women, it includes children. There was a one-year-old, a four-year-old. And so that's Israel's first priority. Two hostages were released on Friday who were American citizens who were just visiting Israel. They don't live here. But Qatar is behind trying to mediate some sort of a prisoner, letting the hostages out from Hamas. Israel continues to say that a ground invasion is going to happen. There are tens of thousands of troops massed right outside Gaza. But Israel has held off on that ground invasion, partly because of pressure from the United States.
Linda, there's also widespread concern that this conflict could expand and draw more Middle Eastern countries. There has been some skirmishes on the Lebanese border. What do we know about conflict zones outside of the Gaza Strip?
So the border between Israel and Lebanon has definitely been heating up lately. Israel has killed about a dozen Hezbollah fighters, and Hezbollah has launched rockets and missiles and anti-tank fire at Israeli soldiers. Israel has evacuated several dozen communities. All in all, there's about 200,000 Israelis who've been forced to leave their homes, either because their homes were near Gaza or because they were near the Lebanese border. So the question really is whether Hezbollah, and the bigger question is whether Iran is going to get involved. The United States has sent two carrier warships and to the area and has said that it does not want that conflict to spread. So far, the only real kind of danger other than Gaza, of course, is the Lebanese border. And I'm not sure if Hezbollah has really made a decision to enter the fight. If it does, not only would that force Israel to be fighting on two fronts at the same time, Hezbollah has some 150,000 rockets, including thousands of long-range rockets that can hit almost all of Israel. So Hezbollah would present quite a serious threat if it does decide to get involved.
Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem. Linda, thank you very much for your time, and please continue to stay safe.
Thank you very much.
VOA's Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem, talking with VOA's Steve Miller. Fears that the Israeli-Hamas war could mushroom into a wider Middle East conflict rose over the weekend, with Washington warning of a significant risk to U.S. interests in the region and announcing a new deployment of advanced air defenses. We get a sense of what a wider conflict might look like in this conversation between Craig Albert, professor of political science and graduate director of the Master of Arts in Intelligence and Security Studies at Augusta University in Georgia, and VOA's Kim Miller.
It really depends on how bad the war gets, how full scale it could get, because right now you're looking at possibly a three front or even a four front war, where you have Israel fighting against Hamas and Islamic Jihad in the Gaza Strip, fighting Hezbollah from Lebanon if they decide to enter the war fully. And indications seem like Hezbollah is preparing some offensive by moving some of their material, war material, to the border. So it looks like they might join. And then depending on what Iran does, if Iran fully escalates and decides to go to war against Israel, you're talking about something that we haven't seen in the Middle East for 50 years, a full-scale, just regional-wide, if not larger, war. Because if Iran enters, you have to predict that the United States is going to enter that war in some heavy capacity on the side of Israel.
And also, it remains to be seen, as you point out, how Hamas is going to react with this possible ground invasion of Gaza. But there are backers as well to Hamas, such as Lebanon's Hezbollah, and as you mentioned, Iran. So how fully escalated could this get?
Oh, this could be a full-scale, multiple front battle with land invasions, with force-on-force, full-scale infantry battles, artillery battles, things that we're seeing, not to the same scale unless Iran enters with Russia and Ukraine. But when we look at all the regional chess pieces at play, you have the Houthi rebels from Yemen firing at U.S. forces right now as well. That's what the U.S. is thinking, that some of these missiles are coming from, that they're shooting down. You have Iran and Syria fighting and firing drones and missiles at U.S. forces that are stationed in Iraq. So you're looking at some type of escalation where Israel and the United States are in some type of war that Israel and the United States has not seen in some time. So it has quite the possibility of becoming a huge problem, not just for the Middle East, but depending on what happens and how the United States and Iran plays, could lead to a global war.
Well, there have been some diplomatic efforts initiated by regional powers, including King Abdullah II of Jordan and President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi of Egypt, international diplomatic stakeholders such as the U.S. They've begun discussions with Israeli and Palestinian actors. How beneficial have these meetings been?
I think they've been beneficial to the extent that they're starting to set up some type of corridors for at least some humanitarian assistance to be delivered to the Gaza Strip, kind of ease the suffering of the Palestinian civilians and citizens not involved in the combat. There is some talk of Hamas releasing the prisoners that they have right now if Israel can guarantee that they won't invade the Gaza Strip. I think that's past what Israel wants. I think Israel is going to invade, period, no matter what Hamas offers them. So I think that this was too big and too much of a catastrophic attack against Israel for Israel not to invade. So I don't think the negotiations will amount to much, except maybe keep external actors out of it and try to limit the war aims that Israel has by going into Gaza Strip. For instance, they pretty much have two war aims of possibilities. They can eliminate Hamas functionally, meaning they get rid of every Hamas member. They pretty much go through and just eradicate the Gaza Strip holdings where Hamas are located through air, land, and sea. Or they can target limitedly and only hit high-value targets, send in their special forces elements, and just take out as many as they can in low-scale, low-intensity combat. So negotiations might allow Israel to do the latter rather than the former, and that would ease the suffering and ease the humanitarian catastrophe that resulted in the Gaza Strip like from a full-scale military onslaught. But that seems to be Israel's top choice right now, is to go in heavy-handed with everything they have.
Professor Craig Albert at Augusta University and VOA's Kim Miller. With that conversation in mind, the United States underscored Sunday that its military presence in the Middle East is being boosted, as of now, only as a deterrent measure. But as we hear from VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias, the U.S. also warned it will swiftly respond to any imminent threats.
As Israeli forces prepare for the next stages of their war against the militant Palestinian group Hamas, concerns of it becoming a wider conflict haven't subsided. In that context, the United States announced additional deployments of air defense systems to the region. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin explained the move on ABC's This Week show.
Recently, we've seen rocket and UAV attacks against bases housing our troops in Iraq and Syria. We maintain the right to defend ourselves, and we won't hesitate to take the appropriate action.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who recently toured the region, emphasized that the boost in U.S. military presence is a deterrent measure. He was interviewed on NBC's Meet the Press.
We don't want to see a second or third front develop. We don't want to see our forces or our personnel come under fire. But if that happens, we're ready for it.
On the humanitarian front, Turkey became one of the latest countries to send aid for Palestinian civilians. But the flow of convoys carrying supplies across Egypt's Rafah crossing into Gaza has been too slow, said Cindy McCain, the executive director of the UN World Food Program, in an interview with ABC.
We were able to feed about 200,000 people last night during dinner. But that's not enough. That's a drop. People are starving, but also this is a national security issue for everyone in this region.
With the stakes so high in the Middle East, it's imperative that the Republican majority in the U.S. House of Representatives elect a speaker, said the chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee, Republican Michael McCaul. He spoke on ABC about the deadlock to fill the seat that has remained vacant since Kevin McCarthy was ousted at the beginning of October.
The world's on fire, and this is so dangerous what we're doing. And most importantly, it's embarrassing because it empowers and emboldens our adversaries.
Despite the urgency, McCaul acknowledged that he doesn't know if a speaker will be elected this coming week or how the process will play out. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Protests showing support for Israelis and Palestinians are being held around the world. But in Orange County, California, there is a neighborhood that has earned the name Little Arabia because most residents are Palestinians and Afghans. Angelina Bagsarian visited the neighborhood and spoke with locals about the situation in the Middle East. Anna Rice narrates her story.
For years, this neighborhood of Orange County has been called Gaza or Little Arabia, thanks to the Palestinians and Afghans who make up most of the community. The family of Lebanese native Mustafa Alam opened a business here in the heart of Little Arabia over two decades ago. Today, he and his fellow business owners are putting out Palestinian flags in support of Gaza civilians.
But I do have a lot of friends here from Gaza. That comes in patron right here. That's an indication that we stand with Gaza.
In the 1990s, Orange County was home to an annual Arab American festival. But after the tragedy of 9/11, the festivities were canceled due to anti-Muslim sentiment. Merve Judah, an American of Palestinian descent, says the reaction to the Hamas attack on Israel reminds her of those times.
I don't feel safe here. I lived through 9/11 where my brothers and sisters were being chased in elementary school, being called terrorists. Now I'm here again, except now I'm being called more names. Animal, despicable, terrorist, pro-Hamas.
Together with other members of the Palestinian community, Judah came to the office of U.S. Representative Katie Porter, demanding that the politicians support her community, many of whom are of Arab descent. Judah is clear in her condemnation of the Hamas attack.
Look at the
Of course, I condemn what Hamas did. Hamas isn't equal to Palestinians, and Palestinians isn't equal to Hamas. To me, lives matter. Whether it's an Israeli life or a Palestinian life, it matters.
Rashad al-Dabak is an activist. He was the one behind wanting Little Arabia to get an official name. His father was born in Gaza and later immigrated to the U.S. with his family.
We're gathering here today in front of the office of Congresswoman Katie Porter because we want her to speak out against the atrocities against the Palestinian people.
And while Porter was not in her office, protesters say her aides did listen to the group's concerns. In the meantime, Little Arabia residents say they will continue to condemn violence and at the same time call for peace in the Middle East. For Angelina Bagdasaryan in Los Angeles, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Following these other stories from around the world, Venezuelans are choosing the candidate they think can end the decade-long crisis-ridden presidency of Nicolas Maduro. They are voting in a primary election on Sunday that the country's opposition organized independently despite government repression and other obstacles. It's the first presidential primary held in Venezuela since 2012. Argentines are going to the polls in an election that could see a right-wing populist become president and adopt controversial measures. Javier Milei rocked Argentina when he unexpectedly received the most votes in August primaries. Milei said if he wins, he'll extinguish the central bank, slash public spending, replace the local currency with the U.S. dollar. So far, partial results counted, it looks like there's going to be a runoff between Argentina's economy minister, Sergio Massa, who's leading, and Milei. A teenage Iranian girl who fell into a coma earlier this month following an alleged encounter with officers over violating the country's hijab law is said to be brain dead. This according to Iranian state media. They reported it on Sunday. There have been concerns, advocates, that she might face the same fate as Mahsa Amini, whose death while in custody of the morality police last year sparked months of nationwide anti-government protests. Iran denies she was hurt in a confrontation with officers. Discussions about the Israel-Hamas war and efforts to continue support for Ukraine dominated a Friday summit between U.S. President Joe Biden, European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen, and European Council President Charles Michel. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wadakasora reports the conflicts overshadowed efforts to resolve long-running disputes between the U.S. and the EU over Trump-era tariffs on European steel, aluminum, and green subsidies.
The now two-week-long war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza and 20 months of Russia's invasion on Ukraine form the backdrop of the U.S.-EU summit in Washington.
We stood together to support the brave people of Ukraine in the face of Putin's aggression, and we stood together to tackle the economic challenges and establish standards to guide our relationship with China. And we're standing together now to support Israel in the wake of Hamas's appalling terrorist attack.
Von der Leyen said the war in Gaza will not distract from the West's rock-solid support for Ukraine.
Putin will ultimately fail. He is running Russia into the ground. These conflicts show democracies must stand together.
The leaders, including Michel, condemned Hamas' attack on Israel.
Israel has the right to defend itself, and that must be done in line with international and humanitarian law.
Meanwhile, trade irritants remain. The two sides failed to agree on removing U.S. tariffs on EU aluminum and steel imports imposed under former President Donald Trump. They were suspended by Biden in 2021 on the condition that Brussels apply similar tariffs to Beijing. Also unresolved, a dispute over the subsidy for green energy transition provided under Biden's climate bill, the Inflation Reduction Act, which gives consumers tax incentives to buy electric vehicles assembled in North America. The EU wants a deal that would allow EVs with batteries using critical minerals sourced from Europe to qualify for some of the tax breaks. Ian Lesser is executive director of the Brussels office of the German Marshall Fund.
These are points of contention, but rather than having the EU retaliate in some form, it would be much better if the US and the European Union could come to some agreement on how to exempt European industry in part from these measures.
The transatlantic partners also aim to curb China's growing power and improve ties to the global south, as well as keep North Korea's and Iran's weapons program in check. Patsy Wirakuswara, VOA News, Washington.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. An estimated 20 million children in sub-Saharan Africa walk barefoot. For many, shoes are a luxury they can't afford. Now, a U.S. charity called Because International is donating to school children some specially designed shoes that expand five sizes. They last for years. Juma Manjanga reports from Nairobi's informal settlements of Kibera, Kenya.
At Karama Academy Primary School in Africa's largest slum, Kenya's Kibra, children sing songs of joy. Thank you for giving us shoes, they sing in Swahili.
Most families, shoes is the last thing they think about. And so when a child is going to school, if they have probably some form of uniform, they will give the uniform, but the child will be barefoot.
The shoe that grows, the name of the donated footwear, caters to the needs of growing children who live in poverty.
Kids grow very fast, and the normal shoes tend to outgrow the normal shoes. That's why we came up with a shoe that grows.
Where an estimated 20 million children walk without shoes due to high levels of poverty. Because International says it has distributed over 425,000 pairs of shoes in more than 100 countries.
The primary objective, number one, is health, you know, so that these children can stay healthy, but also to show them that someone really does care.
The United Nations Sustainable Development Goal number one calls for ending poverty in all its forms, everywhere. While a pair of shoes may not sound like much to some, for the children of Kibra, it means more self-confidence and better health. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Kibra, Kenya.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you for listening. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Joe Biden spoke to the American people on the evening of his return from Israel following the horrific attack by Hamas that slaughtered over 1,300 people and took scores hostage. The president noted that the pure, unadulterated evil unleashed by Hamas echoes nearly 20 months of war, tragedy, and brutality inflicted on the people of Ukraine, people that were very badly hurt since Putin launched his all-out invasion.
Hamas and Putin represent different threats, but they share this in common. They both want to completely annihilate a neighboring democracy, completely annihilate it. Hamas' stated purpose for existing is the destruction of the state of Israel and the murder of Jewish people. Hamas does not represent the Palestinian people. Hamas uses Palestinian civilians as human shields, and innocent Palestinian families are suffering greatly because of them.
Meanwhile, Putin, said President Biden, is responsible for mass Ukrainian graves and the forcible separation of thousands of Ukrainian children from their families. Putin denies that Ukraine has or ever had real statehood. Making sure Israel and Ukraine succeed, the president said, is vital for America's national security.
History has taught us that when terrorists don't pay a price for their terror, when dictators don't pay a price for their aggression, they cause more chaos and death and more destruction. They keep going, and the cost and the threats to America and the world keep rising.
American leadership is what holds the world together, said President Biden.
American alliances are what keep us, America, safe. American values are what make us a partner that other nations want to work with. To put all that at risk if we walk away from Ukraine, if we turn our backs on Israel, it's just not worth it.
To fund America's national security needs and to support its critical partners, including Israel and Ukraine, the president is sending an urgent budget request to Congress. We cannot and will not let terrorists like Hamas and tyrants like Putin win, said President Biden. I refuse to let that happen.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.